Welcome to Bounce Back Stronger, the podcast that explores ways to find peace and purpose no matter what happens. Today's guest is Chuck Shad, an experienced meditation teacher with over 40 years of dedicated study and practice, and the founder of The Inner Theater. Chuck's primary focus is on helping individuals navigate challenges ranging from general life issues to relationships, depression, and anxiety. In this episode, Chuck shares his wealth of knowledge, delving into the intricacies of meditation and its profound impact on our well-being. His approach is unique, as he tailors techniques to suit each individual's specific needs, providing them with the tools to lead a happier and more spiritual life. Thank you so much for joining us on Bounce Back Stronger, Chuck. Yep. So good to have you on the podcast.
Thank you, Donna. Good to be here.
Yes. We were just catching up beforehand. It was just really nice to make the connection. We have some Pittsburgh connections and Connecticut connections. We'll just start right off. How did your journey into meditation begin, and what inspired you to dedicate all this time to studying and practicing both modern and ancient techniques?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a long story, but we'll do a brief version of it. I was an English literature major at UConn. I met my wife there. She was the same English major. There were no jobs. So what we decided to do a few years after we graduated was to get married and move to Los Angeles. We asked everyone that came to the wedding, give us money, checks. I don't want blenders. I'm getting in a VW Rabbit and I'm heading west. So we did that and we stayed out there for 3 or 4 years. And at that time, we got jobs at night, third shift, working at a defense subcontractor. We ended up reading all the stuff that the typist typed during the day, made sure that it sort of looked right. So we did that for a while. And at the time, there was a Pacifica station in Los Angeles. And at night, they had this guy on, and he used to play, he used to call it spoken word. You know, Nancy and I, my wife and I are looking at each other going, I don't know what that even means. But what he did was he put on tapes back then, and he usually would have Ron Dass and Alan Watts, and used sometimes Krishnamurti. So it's kind of a nice little mix. I didn't know any of these people at all. My background was nothing even close to that. I was very struck by it, and my wife as well.
Maybe we should tell them who they are.
Kind of big names, I guess, back then. And
in the meditation world.
In the meditation world. So, you know, they would always say, especially Ram Dass, he'd say, you know, you really have to learn to meditate and da da da. And then we ended up going to some seminars with Ram Dass, weekend kind of things. And then we moved back to Hartford. We ran into a Vietnamese Buddhist monk that had just come to Hartford after Hanoi fell. And he got written up in this free paper. And my wife and I went over and met him and then studied with him for a couple of years. He was a very, very gentle. He taught Mahayana Buddhism, which was just basically a very simple, not abstract at all, just a very gentle way of doing it. And my wife and I became big-time meditators. And then she got pregnant with my first kid, and we kind of lost the thread. We kept studying about it, but we weren't doing it. And then a few things happened. I was an IT consultant, my wife and I. But at one point, I decided to become the hypnotherapist, the guy that I learned it from. Had a big Buddhist background himself. He had actually been a bodyguard for a Tibetan Lama, Rinpoche, Trungpa. I was kind of learning how to be a hypnotherapist. And then I had clients. I was doing it kind of on the side because I was still trying to make the rent money being an IT consultant. I ended up developing some habits, let's just say, and I always drank a lot. I knew I had to stop, and I did stop. But at that point, I was a nervous wreck. I had no idea about the science behind what alcohol does to you. I mean, I knew what a hangover was like, but I had no idea that, like, my nervous system was basically shot. So that's probably why I was anxious. And I ended up getting strung out on tranquilizers. But the doctor had no idea. He looked at me and said, you're having a spiritual crisis, but I don't know what to do for you. I said, well, I'm not going to go back to drinking. He said, good move. He said, well, just take some of these. And I'd be like, all right.
Oh, no.
And a couple of weeks, I go back and I say, I'm still messed up. He said, well, I don't know what to do for you. I'd be like, I don't do for either. So finally, I realized that had to stop. I ended up in the ER. So at one point, I was surfing the web and I saw this Hindu guru guy, and his name is Sadhguru. My wife said, he looks like a Hollywood guru. I don't care what he looks like. I don't care what his background is. It's working. I said, well, what's working? I said, well, every morning I go down for 15 minutes in my filthy rented apartment basement. You're upstairs still asleep. I go down there and I turn this guy on and I close my eyes. And 15 minutes later, I feel better. I said, so I know I have an addictive personality, but this is what I'm doing now. And she'd be like, whatever. You know, and the kids would be like, what is he doing down there? Is he shooting dope down there? What is he going down there for? Is he drinking again? Doesn't look like it. What is he doing? So anyway, one thing led to another, and I ended up being a big daily meditator, ended up listening to the Hollywood Guru by doing about a half an hour just silent and working with breathing. And then I said, wait a minute, I think I'm onto something, and I think I'd like to tell other people about it. So what I did was I volunteered at all the local libraries, and I'd go over there, and you know, we'd have just a one-off, and I kind of got my feet wet, and I enjoyed doing it. And then I got a job at a mental health clinic in Hartford. So I applied, and I went over there, and they hired me. And I was there for like a day, day and a half, sometimes more than that. I ended up working for Mindful. And they had a whole gig where you go in and have virtual meetings with employees that were completely burned out. And you'd have them for 15 minutes. And we got tailor-made this spiritual meditation Yahoo thing in 15 minutes. So I'm like, 15 minutes? I don't see how that's going to work. But it did. And I would have people come back, you know, week to week, and I'd give them their 15 minutes, and they'd be like, yeah, I do. That dried up because they didn't really have the marketing side down. And so I did that by a year and a half, and that was good. And now I'm just doing private clients, one-on-ones. You know, I do some Facebook groups. I have a YouTube channel. So my whole thing, and I've been actually thinking a lot about this, what meditation really does simply for me and for you is to make this great Carl Jung quote. He said, until you make the unconscious conscious, so until you make the unconscious parts of you conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate, or you will say, that's just the way I am. That's who I am. Meditation shows you that. That might be who you are right this second, or that might be who you've come to think you are, but maybe not. And so my meditation now is based on a non-dualism, just watching your own narrative and seeing it for what it is. And neuroscientists will tell us now that we have, as humans, somewhere around 70,000 thoughts each and every day, and 99% of those thoughts, 0.9, are not new. So what we do is recycle these things. It lulls us into that unconscious state that Jung talks about. And until we see it for what it really is, we are held prisoner by it. We are always trying to make sense out of ourselves and the world around us, including all the people we have relationships with, way back, right now. We always just kind of let it go on. And what meditation shows you is, you can keep letting that go on, but see that you are letting it go on instead of being caught up in it and not being objective enough to be able to. I always tell people, before meditation, your mind is like a dirty old room in the back of some dirty old house, and the windows are filthy and they're nailed shut. With meditation, you start peeking out there, maybe starting by getting rid of some of the grime and looking out there. And eventually, if you stick with it, you're seeing a completely different world inside. And when you start to see the world differently, so differently inside, everything else outside.
It makes you start to question, right? What is happening, as opposed to just going along with the same 99% thoughts.
Right.
Is this really real? And the witnessing, I think, is so helpful. And can you talk about maybe some examples of some people that you've helped?
Yeah, I had a client about a year ago, probably in his mid-30s, and he was a police officer in Colorado. He had two kids, married, and he got a job at the Border Patrol and moved his family during the virus, moved his family from outside of Denver, which is where he was from and his wife was from. They had all the family there. Moved to, I think, Arizona, right near the border, and was all stressed out. And one day, he was driving to work, and he had what he called a panic attack. And he had never had a panic attack before.
Aww.
And he was one of those strong, macho, little bit police officer mentality of, you just deal with it. And he ran into me, and we ended up working together. And I said to him, you know, with panic attacks, what you're worried about now is the next one. I said, so you're reliving all that stuff that happened, and now every time you get into the car, you're worried about it happening again. He said, well, yeah. I said, well, let's figure out how we can stop that. And he said, okay. And so I taught him how to use his breathing to calm down. I have a 5-sense experience of when you're in the car, don't just be up here. Feel the bottom of you sitting on a chair and look around and see what you're smelling, some kind of a odor. There always is something. And open the window. Do you hear more cars? Do you hear birds? Whatever you hear, get you out of your head. I said, so if you realize that what you're doing is beating yourself up for something that already happened, then you're free from that a little bit of happening again. And if you keep using your breath, you say to yourself, well, if I am going to have another panic attack, now I know what to do. And so after a couple of weeks, you know, I'd be meeting with him every few days and he'd say, yeah, I'm still worried. But at a certain point, the clients I work with, they actually embody what I'm trying to force into them and they get it. And I knew he had it. So this guy, all of a sudden, he calls me up one day. Here we have an appointment and I'm seeing what I was doing. And he said, well, I'm going on vacation. I'm going back home for like a long weekend. I said, well, how are you feeling about that? He said, well, I'm kind of flipped out. I said, what do you mean you flipped out? He goes, well, I'm worried about my blood pressure. I said, wait a minute, this came out of nowhere. You never talked to me about your blood pressure before. I said, did you go to the doctor and he told you you had a blood? No. I said, so what do you mean you worry about your blood pressure? He said, well, my watch is telling me that it's fluctuating too much. I said, what? He said, yeah, you know, it goes up and down. I said, well, doesn't everybody's blood pressure go up and down if you're watching it like in real time? He said, well, I don't know. I said, well, you know what you need to do? I said, you want to have a good vacation, right? He said, yeah. I said, can you leave that watch home? I said, you're going to know what time it is, right? I said, time is available everywhere. You got your phone, you'll be able to see what time it is. Well, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? You had a life before the watch. You just got the watch, and now you're getting strung out on that. I said, as humans, we always got to find more stuff to get crazy about. I said, so now you're not worried about the panic attack. Now you're having a panic attack about your blood pressure on your watch. I said, you see how crazy that is? He said, yeah. So he did leave it home, and he had a great vacation.
And isn't that true, though? Because he was probably anxious about the trip.
Everything.
And so what happens, it's like, I call it the St. Elmo's fire. I don't know if you ever remember that movie, but there's this whole thing where Demi Moore is upset about her life and having to go from being a child student to becoming an adult. Instead of dealing with that, she ends up doing all these crazy things and worrying about her step monster and her funeral. And I'm like, it's St. Elmo's fire. You're worried about the thing that doesn't really matter. And it's because you're agitated about something else. And I think that's one of the things that you see, right, with meditation, is that it kind of goes, wait a minute, is this really, like you said, really, is it the watch?
Well, you know what meditation does is, and this is tied into the making the unconscious conscious, it allows you to slow this down.
Yeah.
Even when you're not, quote unquote, meditating right that second. The more you meditate, and I say, if you can meditate 15 minutes every day, that's fine. Don't flip out. Don't say to yourself, I'm really into this, and do it for 3 days and then miss the fourth. Then you wake up the fifth, and it's like a bad old friend that you had. It just kind of stinks. And you're like, you got an attitude about it because you didn't do it the fourth day. So just forget about that and do it right then, you know. Yeah. And so if you do it on a regular basis, repetition, you need some good repetition in here. And this is conscious repetition that allows you to, the next time you're feeling a certain way about making dinner again, you can be in the kitchen, and you're not resenting being in the kitchen. You're actually involved with how cold is the water I've got my fingers in? Or I wonder if I should use this or this instead of, I can't believe I keep having to do this. No one else will do it. I'm the cook in the house, so I can say that. But, you know, I mean, I can look at it as a bad experience every day, or I can look at it as a, not an adventure, but kind of, so that you're just in there in that group and you're not worried about it. Like with alcohol, I was a nervous kind of person to start with. I always tell people that if there had been an open bottom kindergarten, that's where I would have been, because it was a nerve-wracking experience. So I started drinking early. I came from a repressive Irish background, so I didn't have any trouble fitting in. I didn't know that, A, I was not as nervous as I thought I had been. Certainly not that I had to keep this up. But B, there was nothing inherently nerve-wracking about myself when I got the substances out of my system. And I was thinking the other day, because a lot of our friends are dying of drink now. Some of them fall down in the middle of the night and hit their heads, never wake up. Other people do this, that, and the other thing. And I think one of the things that I run into with people that have drank for a while is you never really get to finish a thought in your head. It never can go all the way to the period. And, you know, that's why when I see people post on Facebook that are just starting to be sober and they're flipping out about the mood swings or flipping about this, that, and the other thing, I always just say, just hold on, because every day there's going to be less madness up here. It's going to go away even if you do nothing. It's going to go away if you just don't do that one thing that we have trouble not doing. Most of it will go away. I find that people that are in recovery, people that are in trauma, people that are just trying to get away from something disturbing, whether they did it to themselves or whether it was done to them. And that whole false sense of, I'm done with that, and now I'm really busy getting myself together. And then, you know, you got to watch it, because then you start painting yourself colors that you might not even be. With meditation, it's like, hold on. Like Ram Dass used to say, this entire lecture hall that I'm speaking to right now needs to go to something called Nobody Special Training. And I know you had Salzburg on a couple of weeks ago. She knows what she's been through.
She
that,
does. But, she does.
You know, and that Nobody Special thing of like, just cut it out. It's too much baggage. There's too much maintenance when you create this thing, this personality that's oversized or whatever it is. And, you know, people that are just getting straight or whatever you want to call it, kind of go through this too, because you got to have something to hang your hat on and you don't know what it is because you kind of mess up from the substance still. So I always say, just hold on. Just be quiet. You got this. You're doing what you wanted to do. And you're realizing that you can do it. And you just got to keep yourself a little bit honest. Like I had a woman over the summer that lives in the next town over. And she ran into me through somebody. And she came over here and we used to have face to face. And she had a lot of things she was trying to get over. And she was finding herself living by herself in her late 50s and drinking a bottle of wine every night. And then worrying about the next day, you know, works for herself. So, you know, she could keep going if she wanted to. And I looked at her one day, I said, you know what? This is the third or fourth time that we've met. And, you know, some weeks you're cool and some weeks it gets you and you slip. I said, but I want you, when you're driving on my driveway, I want you to remember only one thing I said today, which is you're at the end of your drinking career and you just don't 100% know it. But I know it, and you're going to be fine. She stopped coming over, and I was kind of worried about her, and I reached out to her a couple of times, and I said, you know, how are you doing? And she hit me back right before Christmas, probably 3 months since I had been in contact with her, and she said, I'm totally sober. I'm done with it. It's over, and you were right. Thank you very much. I said, just drop the drama. I said, you're done with this. I said, but you're not done with the drama. I said, you just want the drama. And I said, now it's all wrapped up in your alcohol thing. Mm-hmm. I said, drop the drama. You'll find plenty of things to do when you're not guzzling that bottle of wine by yourself. You will. And it'll be a lot better for you.
That's right. Talk a little bit about what a beginner meditator should know. And maybe we can do a little meditation to share? Because not everybody that listens, I mean, you know, even if they do yoga or they energy or they're on a journey, they don't do meditation.
Right. Well, I think people now, this is my jaded Western old man, old white guy version. obviously, we're infatuated by appearances, right? Mm-hmm. Physical mm-hmm. appearances. So if you have a choice between being sane or being good looking and rich, you would think, well, of course I'll choose sanity. But no, you wouldn't. And so you'd rather get yourself going and then just keep doing that. Because meditation can be frightening to people because they're like, you're asking me to get to know this? This? You want me to look like this is like work looking in the mirror. Are you kidding me? But the thing is, you look in the mirror and you can look away. I mean, with this, you just sit with your breath and you just very non-emotionally take a look. And so with new people, I do some deep breathing to get them into that. And I keep my sense of humor intact because I don't want it to be heavy, because it doesn't have to be.
No.
It's just your natural. I tell people, this is your natural way of being. You've just gotten removed from it. You might be one step removed. You might be 120 steps removed. It doesn't matter because we're right here. And if we realize that we're removed from our original self, then we don't have to be that removed version anymore. And all meditation does is say, hey, drop the emotion. Just sit here quietly. If you want to close your eyes, fine. And so what we end up doing is taking three or four long, slow, I always call them intentional breaths. Long as you want. You're just going to get a long inhale and maybe a longer exhale. But after three or four of them, you'll find that breathing rhythm that's yours. And so as you take a few more long, slow, deep breath, I bet you can even start to see the thoughts that come into mind. And as you sit taking these quiet, non-judgmental breaths, you might even be able to begin to watch those memories. Are they memories? Are they versions of something that happened before? Or are they kind of apprehensive about something that might not have happened yet? Are you worried that everything's not going to be all right? What's got you? What's going through? We all have this inner dialogue. And if you actually take a chance and use your breath to take a look, you see that there's very little new stuff happening. But we tend to have a new experience and instantaneously dropping into something else that already happened. Unconsciously reminded us of something else that unconsciously looked like something else. But I'd like you to just take three or four more long, slow, deep breaths. you can start to feel the way your body feels in that chair, couch you're sitting in. What's that smell in the room? Something from before? Maybe the window's open. You're smelling something outside. Can you hear anything beneath this voice of mine that you're listening to? Something's happening always. And as we sit, steady, not worried, just here. Because if you think about it, this one moment that we're having right now is the moment we've always had. It's now. It's not from before. Even if you're thinking of before, it's still now. So take a couple more long, slow, deep breaths. You're feeling more relaxed. You're comfortable here, because what you've experienced is there's absolutely nothing frightening about expanding this one moment so we can see what it's really like instead of taking all these moments unconsciously and not feeling that everything is okay. So two more long, slow, deep breaths for me. Then you can open your eyes and come back.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's like a vacation, isn't it? That's why I always think of it as a little vacation.
Hey, it is a vacation. No, it really is. Yeah. I mean, it really is. I mean, I always tell people that. When you start to feel the effects of meditation, like I have, I mean, there's a point where you just want to go out in the street and stop people and say, come on, here it is. It's right here. But you can't. You just can't
do that. Because no, people, they frown on that.
For whatever reason, the universe works in that. And I hate people that start using that kind of stuff. But, you know, the universe has its own rhythm. And it has its own stuff going on. And we're just part of it. We can't see the whole picture. But I want to reach as many people as possible who are looking for that guy coming down the street and wondering, I wonder if he's got something for me. Because I would have liked to run into this guy at some point. And I probably did. I just walked right by. Right by, because I was going to the package store. Gotta go.
Yeah. I want to get the bottle of wine.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the way it is, right? But yeah, if you're out there and you feel like you need something or this resonated, you know, get in touch with me.
Yep. And all of those links will be in the show notes. This has been really, really fun. And
hey, I did.
I thought that was amazing. I needed that and I didn't even know it.
Yeah. See, there you go.
I hope you enjoyed that time with Chuck. Thank you so much for listening. I hope the episode was helpful. And if it was, please subscribe, drop a review, or share it with your friends and family. That's the best way to get it in the hands of those who may benefit. And if my daughters, Sienna and Sylvie, are listening, I just want you to know how proud I am of you. And I love you so much. Bye now.